Session number 23848, reel 27.
Mr. Wargus, reel 27. Right, Mr. Wargus, you were mentioning Dennis Thatcher, I think.
Margaret Thatcher's father, Mr. Roberts. Her father, Roberts, had a grocery shop in Grantham, which of course is now common knowledge. And a friend of mine who was a rep said, "You don't want to call on Roberts in Grantham." I said, "He's a miserable sod." Because he'd said that, I used to sort of make an excuse in my own mind not to call on him. And I had a good excuse because his shop was on the corner of the Great North Road, the A1, by traffic lights for the Nottingham Road. After about 6 months, I was travelling Lincolnshire and Nottinghamshire. I was coming back from Lincolnshire, and it was a Friday afternoon, and I saw a parking place outside his shop, and I thought, well, I'll go and see him. And he stood behind the counter with his striped apron on and a trilby hat, and I saw that he had my product on the counter because we also dealt through wholesalers. And as I spoke to him, my words sort of went through him and hit the wall at the back and bounced back. He showed no interest whatsoever. But I did say, the advantage of buying direct from us is that we can guarantee, as we could, that the product that gets into your shop will be only 2 days old from leaving the factory. And he said, "Send me a case." So I didn't argue any more. I just turned and I walked out of the shop and thought, this is ridiculous, because he was this man who I'd been told was a bit of an ogre. And he's given me an order without even sort of querying it. And I used to call regularly, and he'd pay me and he'd order another case of this stuff. And he was out one journey, and there were two ladies, assistants in the shop, and they said, "Oh, whenever your biscuits come in..." You know Chocolate Penguin, of course, don't you? In those days, they were good value, they're not much good now. But he said, "As soon as your biscuits come in," he said, "he makes a big parcel and sends them to his daughter. And his daughter is ever so clever, and she's at university, and she loves chocolate." And, of course, I didn't realise then that he was talking about the lady who was to be Margaret Thatcher. And it's funny, because I was reading a little while ago that she was, at an interview, she was eating, she had a box of chocolates and was feeding her dog with one every time she ate one. And apparently she's a chocoholic.
And when did you connect this, when did you finally connect this grocer that you dealt with?
When Margaret Thatcher became famous, and of course her maiden name was Roberts, which we knew. And of course now the shop has a plaque on it. After he went bust, actually. But he was an alderman, and of course whenever she talks about her father, she usually has tears in her eyes, and so what a wonderful man. But he was a typical small town trumped up politician, and with all fairness as well. When he went bust, the shop was empty for a long while, then somebody took it over and opened a restaurant, called it the Premier. And they rebuilt the shop. But I went in and I said, "Well, this is wrong to start with." I said, "Because the counter used to be that way and you've got it that way." But they'd found some old tins, because in those days grocers could have their own labels put on cans, and they got Roberts canned fruit and canned fish and rest of it. But it was never a success. And that closed, and I think it's a chiropodist now, or an osteopath or something. But that was quite interesting.
Now, how long did you stay in that job, and then?
I was about 5 years in that job, and then I saw an advert in the paper for ex-officers or senior NCOs, a job that was, so I thought, well, I'll write to that. And that turned out to be Playtex girdles, Playtex Foundation, were American company. I eventually did get the job with them, which brought us into the wonderful income of $800 a year, with the possibility, they said, of you earn 2,000 if you, with your commission. The day I joined them, I realised it was the wrong job for me because they were a high-pressure American company. They're not so much now because they've had to come to terms with business as it is, but of course they're still a big name in the ladies' foundation market. And I worked for them for 5 years until they got tired of me and I went to a ladies' underwear company, Courtauld's. And I was with them another 6 years until there was a big reorganisation. They found Courtauld's had got so many underwear companies competing with each other, like Kayser Bonder and Proper Pride and Taylor Woods and Brettles and Lord knows what. They decided to cut out some of their brands and concentrate on one or two what they thought were the best. What in fact happened was the ones they thought were the best were the ones that the public no longer knew, and they went bust very quickly. And I decided it was time that, I was, by this time I was 53, and jobs were getting a bit harder, so I went self-employed in industrial chemicals and stayed with them until, 67. Longest job I ever had was my last. And
till you were age 67. Now, during this period of employment, post-war employment, did you keep in touch with any of the regimental or comrades associations?
With the regiment, I kept in contact with one or two colleagues that lived in Nottingham. And through them, we started to go to the Christ pilgrimage every first Sunday in July. The foresters have it's known as a pilgrimage in the reunion. They come from all over the country. It's one of the few regiments, I believe, that do it. We have a memorial on what's known as Christ Stand. There was a...
Where's that at?
It's in Derbyshire, on a very high property. On a clear day, you're supposed to see seven counties. You can certainly... I have seen Lincoln Cathedral from there, and that's a heck of a long way away. But you can see the Leicestershire Hills, the Staffordshire, the Derbyshire, the Worcester, I think it's Worcester. And there was a beacon or a stand of such going back many centuries. And this memorial was put up in 1922 for the First World War, and of course has been added to it. And they go on the first Sunday in July to commemorate the Battle of the Somme. And just as a matter of interest, I mean, the Forest had lost 11,500 men in the First World War and 1,500 in the Second. But since we've been amalgamated with the Worcestershire Regiment, of course, now they come. And the old Forest is still... don't like the thought of the Worcestershire regiments using our traditions. But I didn't really bother. I don't think many of them did. I mean, we're too busy looking after ourselves and our families, I suppose. And then, but I always kept in contact with old friends. And, of course, being a local regiment, it was useful that you still run across them. And a Derbyshire regiment as well. And probably, 15 years ago, I joined the British Legion and have been active with them ever since. I'm Poppy Appeal and chairman. I was chairman of the Scouts of the village, and I now work for SAFA, for ex-servicemen. And
what do you do for them?
Well, I'm what is known as a caseworker. I go and see them and interview them and see what they want. And fill in large forms. Fortunately, I don't have to go through the system of getting the money. I do the initial interview and report on them, and other people do what I ask them to do, or hope they will. And I've been with them 11 years. So I'm still sort of connected to the services. I mean, with SAFA, I meet Navy, RAF and Army, and it's now reaching the stage when a lot of the post-war service are the people we see rather than the wartime. We still see a lot of Second World War, but there are a lot of the younger people, if you can call 50s and 60s younger, which they are, of course.
Now, yeah. I think you've mentioned off the tape that you've been back to Tunisia several times. Could you just talk about those experiences?
I first went back with a colleague, Alan Holmes, who was in my platoon and went on a patrol with us, who I met after the war. And we went for a long weekend in the days when you could go all sorts of strange, faraway places with strange sounding names for very little money. I think it cost about 50 quid. And we flew to, we got a hotel in Bizerta and hired a car with the intention of trying to find the battlefields again. And we did, we just drove on the virtually the 30th anniversary of a certain, the same time, March 1973. And we found the viaduct, and we went to Sultana Farm, which is the battalion headquarters, and we eventually got to a cemetery that where we would have finished up had we been killed at the time. This particular cemetery near Tabarka in the north, and before I sort of I remember when we got there, neither of us, we were talking about it the other day, funny enough, both of us were so overcome that we couldn't talk. And we stood there, and after about 5 minutes, I said, if I don't get out of here, I said, let's go. And we went, and we drove for about half an hour and before we could even talk. And I think what struck us was the fact that we saw names on the stones that we had seen either buried temporarily or people, certainly people we knew. And it was the first time that I'd ever been affected like that. I'd been to cemeteries in France and other cemeteries, but to see people you knew was a completely different kettle of fish. I've been back 3 times since, but I've never experienced, and I don't want to, that sort of feeling I got. When we first arrived in Bizerta, in Tunis rather, we were the only 2 men on the flight who were going to this particular hotel, so we had a taxi which was provided by the airline, and in the taxi was an Italian courier for some firm or other, and an English girl who was a courier. And he said, were you here during the war? So we said yes. Well, he said a lot of Italians come here to see the battlefield. And this English girl said, was there a battlefield here then? And she knew nothing at all. There's ever been any fighting. I said, well, there are 9 British cemeteries and a German cemetery and an American cemetery. And she said, oh, I never knew that. So we thought, what have we wasted our time for those years ago? But and I think a lot of people go to Tunisia now and never even, they don't relate it to, they go to Libya and probably relate it if they could go there, but Tunisia is sort of forgotten. Having been back since, and when we visited not all the cemeteries, but about 6 of them, it even surprised me the casualties that occurred in six months of fighting. There were 50,000 or something like that.
Now, I think you mentioned off the tape about when you went back and you looked at the battlefield where you were wounded, yeah. The sense of space was difficult. Could you just describe that?
Funny enough, the same thing occurred when we first went back. When we were in our position at a place called Jebel Abiod, which has now been changed to Nefsa, I think they call it now, they talked about Sedjenane Mine and Sedjenane and Tamar and places like that, as if they were just round the corner. But of course, in reality, they were 12, 15 miles away. But we hadn't any conception of the distances between them. And it was the same when I did this advance myself across this open ground. I thought it was in my own mind, a matter of 20 or 30 yards, rather, in fact, like going across the road to those trees there. When I went back and found the place, in the event, it was more like 200 yards. And to have got across that amount of land with ground without sort of being fired at was quite an achievement, I think, in a way. But I can now see why it was so difficult to get back again, because it wasn't so near as I thought. It was much further. And what we also, having been back, we find that places that were referred to then are nowhere near, in reality, to where we thought they were, put it that way. I mean, but otherwise, I can't really comment on it. I know some of the distances, again, which we thought were a long way, now are quite near. I mean, when we pull back to from one hill to another hill, they're both within your sight when you're on it. You can see both at the same time, and yet it seemed a heck of a long way at that particular time to do it. But,
right now, Mr. Wildest, since we last spoke, you've also had a chance to look at the film that was taken of Sedjanine area by the Army Film Unit around about the time you were wounded, reference number 377. Looking at that footage, were you able to relate?
Oh, yes. I mean, the terrain is obviously the same. And the tunnel, I remember vaguely at the time. Of course, I've seen that since. But that's exactly the same now, really, as it was then. And the railway station is the same. But, it's funny, what always... I noticed, well, everyone noticed on these silent films, is the fact that you see, they say, gunfire and explosions, but of course without the sound it doesn't convey much to you at all. We went down to the War Office, or Imperial War Museum, some years ago, and we've shown these films on this highly flammable material, and I think we were only allowed about 8 of us in the room at the time. And what was described as enemy gunfire on the ridge was sort of little puffs in the distance. And you wondered, in fact, what the photographer was doing. But those were quite good. I think they got a good representation.
Were you aware of the Army Film Unit and war correspondents and so on at any time?
Only I remember Howard Marshall. Somebody told me Howard Marshall had been around some gun site and had asked them very politely to fire a few rounds in the direction of the enemy so that he could report that he'd seen the gunners in action. But otherwise, no. We didn't. At least I didn't.
Now, you've mentioned that you've been involved with the Sherwood Foresters or Comrades Association.
Yeah.
What about the Lincolns, the unit that you're
in? No, I've never... You see, I was only with the Lincolns, I sort of attached them a couple of months, and there was one Lincoln Corporal Christian. He was wounded, or had been wounded slightly prior to the First Battle of Sedjanine, and he'd come back to me, a very, very rather disgruntled, in fact, the fact that he'd had to come back after being wounded. And he said, I never realised there was so much blood about, but he was a schoolmaster. Whether he was a schoolmaster then, but he was certainly, I ran into him in Nottingham, where he was teaching. And we exchanged pleasantries, and he said that he had notification for a reunion of the Lincoln, but as it was at Spalding, and I don't know whether he went or not, but he did ask me if I was interested, and at the time I wasn't at all interested, because one, I didn't really know anybody. Not I didn't know enough people to warrant going back. And I don't know what's happened. I believe that they still do have an association, but of course the Lincolnshire Regiment is now being absorbed with the Norfolks and the Suffolks into the East Anglia Brigade or something. That it's they're no longer an identity or a separate identity. But I'm interested. I'm still interested in the regiment, but I've no particular interest in the battalion whatsoever. I've got enough to on my plate anyway with the foresters.